Alam exhales heavily, like a blowfish. I can't believe we're doing this. I can't believe we're about to pull this off. Then, finding my eyes with his baby blues, he says, I'll see you at the finish. See you at the finish, I echo. And as I close the door, it occurs to me that for the first time, the finish line ain't even a place. It can't be charted, or graphed, or put on a map. This time, the finish line is people. I jog, quick-paced along Mad Ave, and not far off, a few beggars have taken up residence for the night. One of them's lying, huddled under a rough woolen blanket, legs sticking out. He wants people to see. He's not your everyday beggar. I don't slow as I pass, though I can't help but stare at his knees, skin stretched out, high and thick. His shins are bowed, muscles and bones making room for the tumors. I shudder and cringe in a way my mind doesn't understand. Fear, I guess. Running by, I read the chalk writing on the boardwalk. HBNC positive, not contagious, homeless. Spare a drop? Just a sip from your canteen? He calls to my back. But I try to ignore him. I can't, though, because something occurs to me. He's 100 feet back by the time my feet begin to slow. Homeless. Roofless. I spin around, race back the way I came. When he sees I've returned, he smiles, shows off the gaps in his teeth. Thank you, miss, he says, and holds out his hands. You, I start, kneeling down. Can you get to a sick house? How will you get the cure? He takes back his hands, looking at me like I've asked him the silliest question imaginable. He scrunches his brows and closes one eye, considering. A moment later, I suppose I could find one in the morning. If my legs feel like doing the work of it. He hoots, pats his thigh. Then he points to my belt. I'll be sure they do, if you want to pass me a drop from that pretty canteen I see. Like he's doing me a favor. I choke back a cry, a yell. I want to stomp my foot, scream at the world. How did we not think of this? So much time ironing out the details. Every one of these last 48 hours has hurt me, in some way. Even he was part of the payoff, though we don't know it. More holes in the plan. More holes in the plan? An extermination plan that doesn't account for the homeless? It makes no sense. In my gut, the twinge is back, a wavering feeling, a compass that has lost its north. Well? I shake my head and pull off my sack, taking a vial from one of the copper boxes. If Kent knew. This ain't fair. I know it ain't. It's not his fault that he had no time to hand-deliver a vial all the way to a northern quadrant, but it's not like his dad won't get the cure at all. I uncork my canteen and pass it. The beggar pours too long, smacks his lips at the sound of the splashing water. I have to tip the thing away from him, or he'd probably drain it. While he downs the water from his own canteen, I give him the vial. Drink this, please? I ask, but he won't answer, or even nod. I have no time to waste on an argument. Checking my cuff comm, 27 minutes till the squadrons fly through. I tell myself that this changes nothing. The water is still going to people who need it. Keep moving. Keep moving. Chapter 49. 11:40 p.m. Sunday. Focus. My breath catches when I see the metal bosun's chair Benny used to roof my Rimbo. It dangles against the facade of a narrow red brick high-rise, like any other pre-washout remnant. I give silent thanks to the ancient nutjobs who rigged chairs to most of these buildings so they could have their windows cleaned. With fresh. For windows. Shaking my head, I look up. The Milky Way stretches over the ward, like asphalt and snow flung to the sky. Aside from the aisle, electric, blue-white, needle-sharp towers, and Ward Hope, it's the brightest thing out there. And sitting right in front of me, nearly invisible. My Rimbo. It's real. We're really doing this. My heart does a jig. I hop over the bridge's last few planks and onto the roof, right up to it. The boilers rattling away, a steam engine sending out heat good as any fire. It's the only noise up here, and the only noise for miles. Before, the city was abuzz. Now, you can hear everyone, waiting. It's eerie. Shakes my breath. No checkered flags. No spectators. No jeering. A roof race no one knows about. Ironic that the race we keep secret is the first to really matter. I lift the roof and climb in, sinking into the familiar seat, breathing the pit's smell, old and musky. Puts the feeling of home in my bones. I breathe out and finally feel like I know what I'm doing. Then I see them, the packages, stacked up atop the dash next to my headset. 3 more copper boxes, 1 for each sick house roof along my route. And I do exactly the thing that I shouldn't. I imagine the people, hundreds of them, like 100 Avens. Her number's not in there anymore, and I'm so thankful, but without her to focus on. That feeling I had at the hospital, of being so full up? Just 1 of those boxes holds 50 times that feeling. 5 boxes, 250 times. And when I think of everyone, 800 times that feeling, I want to hurl. 1 drop-off, I remind myself, even just 1 is worth it. I can't stand to look at all them, the faces, the life count, because I'm not Avon or Callum. They can see the numbers. Giving is a part of them. If life were a numbers game, they'd count for infinity. They're the ones you can count on, because they never count themselves. They're too good. I've never been too good, and that's my saving grace. My mind relaxes. My grip eases on the wheel, because I can handle one. I reach for my headset, to sync it with my cuff comm. Earbud in my ear, mic by my mouth. I'm ready as I'll ever be. I'm in, I say to the others, and take a swig from my canteen while my hands are still free. The static comes back in rounds, our signals linking up. Took you long enough, one voice crackles. Oh, Kent, I'm going to love having you in my head this race.
Whew! Drop off 1, down,
Terrence yells. When Jones calls out 2 seconds later that he's made his 2nd drop-off, I say into my mic, B, I'm putting these guys on mute. Too many voices. It's gonna drive me bonkers. I think Tear actually boos me. Then it's only me and Benny. Strapped into my Rimbo, everything comes into focus. Liquid nerves shift to metal. Breathing turns metronome even. This is the only place where I know what I'm doing. Everything else may have changed, but not this. Not here. 1 last time, I project a map of the route onto my lap and face it westward, the direction I'm headed. Neon green, yellow, and red lines warp over my thighs, but the refresher is enough. Yellow, the 11 rooftops, total. Red, my 5 sick house drop-offs. The entire route is no longer than a half mile, and my cuff comm reads T-minus 19 minutes. 19 minutes till the governor's squadron flies through, dropping off their cure. 11 jumps. I should be done in less than 5 minutes. 7, max. Depending on what Derek's chosen. Will he tell Katana I'm alive? Slow and steady, I ease against the acceleration. Not 1 of my cargo will I let get destroyed because I jumped the gun. My Rimbo rolls forward. I lean in. Give it more. The wheels drag against a thin layer of undrained water covering the copper rain collection panels. Into my mic. I'm off, Benny. I'm moving faster now, but I'll need to gather enough speed to make the jump. I step on the acceleration. The mobile jolts forward, and I watch my water tank drop a notch. The edge nears, and I check for my heading on the steering wheel's rotating compass globe. 270 degrees. I'll need a bearing of 263, so I angle left before giving a propulsion boost. I watched the black slide closer, once more gunning the steam engine. Here it comes. My Rimbo sails over the side, with a lurching stomach, neck tight to the headrest. A smile creeps up. This next moment, right before the drop, I live for it. Despite the fear brewing in my head, my body goes giddy. The mobile hits the highest point of the arc. Ain't nothing but now. For not even a fraction of a second, I'm weightless. I'd stay this way forever if I could, holding in my air like a balloon. Except I'm no balloon. My Rimbo begins to fall. Up and up, my stomach rises into my chest. Out of habit, I reach for my favorite button. Rockin'. Another pre-washout classic spills from the speakers, this time chosen by Benny. Nice, B. I laugh, snort into the mouthpiece. He's passing me a not-so-secret message via the lyrics.
Just want you to be careful, that's all,
he answers, and the line goes quiet, just in time for the chorus. Low rider, don't use no gas now. Low rider, don't drive too fast. 10 feet over the second roof, I lean forward to keep the rear from bottoming out. Too late, I see it, the main gutter, smack where I'm about to land. My Rimbo skids. You bracken idiot! How did you miss that? One rear wheel in the gutter, I'm at a sideways slant. Now I've got to get out of the ditch. I watch my water level drop even more as I step on the acceleration and then hit the propulsion button. This time I give it everything. Full speed ahead. I angle the wheel toward the fourth roof instead of the third, because I won't be touching down there. My first delivery may be on that roof, but I'm going over it. The edge is nearer, nearer, and I forget how to breathe. Just this one drop. Just one. Then I'm hurtling over the side. In midair, I reach for the first box. I slide open the weight chute using my foot, and a gust of cold floods the pit. I look down, between my feet, drainage pipes. Here goes. I drop the box. Like a vacuum, it blows through the chute, then out of sight behind my mobile. I crane my neck. Land on the roof. Just this one. And there it is, bouncing along the rooftop. Into the mic. Drop off one, complete! I burst, and exhale so hard I can feel my lungs tugging together. It worked. It worked. Too soon, my stomach pitches, lungs sucked dry by the drop. I look down, under me, Mad Ave. No, 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 a good 30 feet too far. Was my speed wrong? More propulsion. Head folded between my knees, I peer down the chute, wheeling the mobile on in my head. She listens. I watch as my Rimbo closes the gap, and forget to drop the second box. Brack! I curse, teeth clenched. Fast, before landing, I chuck it through the opening. My Rimbo touches down, and a handful of gravel sprays into the pit, pings my face, stings my tongue. I shut my trap with a whimper and look left. 3 feet over, I could have landed on metal paneling. I realize something else. The open chute, it's why I almost didn't make it to the fourth roof. Air in the pit was dragging my Rimbo. What are you, a rookie? I scold, and cut the wheel at a hard right, for a heading of 340 degrees. Off the northeastern corner, toward the fifth roof on my route, I go, hating myself for not being more careful. I'm so in my head, I almost missed them. Beamers. Only 300 feet away, by Central Bay. Can't be Tear. He's probably at Quad 3 by now. The mobile jumps from roof to roof, closer, headed straight for me. This is not good. Flipping on the comm line. Come in, Benny, I say into my mouthpiece. You see what I'm seeing? He should have a clear view of this from the Empire clock. I wait.
I am, and you're not alone. Four of you, four of them, he tells me, through static.
But now I'm not paying attention. Rear first, I'm whipped down. My Rimbo bottoms out. I forgot to lean forward, and even my suspension system turns against me. I curse myself yet again as the steering wheel throws itself to the left and my tires spin out beneath me.
Did you just bottom out, Renata?
Benny asks. Even through a headset, he knows. It's enough to nearly set me off. Everything is going to pieces. Then, like a slinky on steroids, the shock coils decompress, send my butt flying. I'm thrashed upward into the glass, without even my hair to ease the blow. A throbbing ache closes my eyes for me, and when I do open them, I still can't see. Before my Rimbo touches down again, I straighten the wheel. Where does the roof end? Landing, I hammer on the brakes, eyes open. Whited out vision turns to purple, to brown. Then tall rectangles fill in my blind spots. Tall rectangles, and something else. Like a bullet. Black. Beelining for my Rimbo. Headlights blinding in the distance. An Omni. One of the Tetai. But it's too soon for things to go so wrong. I've only made 2 drop-offs. In my chest, panic starts shredding my nerves. It turns me stupid, tempts me to look through the window, just to make sure. It could be Derek, not Katana or the others. But that's a terrible idea. My Rimbo slowed to a standstill. I'll be squashed. Clumsy, disoriented, I spin my torso in all directions, trying to get my bearings even though my instincts are telling me to move. Any direction. Then I look down. On my steering wheel, the compass sphere has stopped revolving, at precisely the right heading. I'm arrowed toward my 3rd drop-off, the hardest on my route. I laugh, a bellyful whoop of a laugh. This small bit of fate. It's like the universe is forgiving me for tonight's muck-ups, keeping me afloat for the next jump. I'm reminded that it ain't game over. Not yet. I gun the steam engine, and I don't lift my foot, not even as the tank dips below half. My Rimbo plows ahead, aimed for the sloped plates. I'll use them as ramps for picking up speed, but not because the next roof is far. Worse, the jump is a rise, not a drop, meaning up. Glancing right, northwest, I search for the Omni, spot the headlights 20 feet away. But it's not Katana in the driver's seat. Copper hair, sparkling, and obvious despite the Omni windshield's dark tint. Derek? I don't understand. All those things he said. He could never hurt me. Were they even true? If he's here to stop me. The muscle of my heart wants to rip itself apart and fight, all at the same time. I understood what he was saying before, outside the hospital. A part of me even agrees. People dying from a disease is horrible, but it's nature. Sitting back, not trying to stop a genocide from happening, that's an entirely different beast. I don't want to go against him, but I will.
Come in, Ren, Benny calls through my headset. The others, something's happened. I'm syncing you up again.
A broken stream of static hits my ear, and below my tires I feel the incline. I hold down the rear propulsion, allowing for drag caused by the chute. It'll burn a trail behind me. The Omni will see my path like I've drawn him a map. Plating disappears. I'm riding on air. And then, Kent's voice.
No, Tear, you can't head back. My dad, the Vile.
I've got no choice, Tear answers, screeching metal. Then feedback.
I can't breathe for a moment. Is Tear hurt? And then I hear his voice again.
I'm on 3 tires as it is. They took out my 4th. I have to, man. I'm sorry.
More feedback. More metal. All of it high-pitched and grating. Like in free fall, I feel my stomach drop. Far, far away. Not the others, too.
Damn it, Terrence. Jones, you can do it. You're no...
His voice cuts out.
Brack, I hear him grunt. What the... Where'd the package go? It just dis...
The other Tetai have got to be here, too. I've still got a job to do. Let them come after me. I shift my weight to my Rimbo's nose up. The distance shrinks away. 30 feet becomes 20, then 10. Open chute.
Holding the third box, I wait. At 5 feet, my stomach knows what's coming. The apex of the jump. Last minute, I look around for the Omni. My skin itches. I can't find it. Eyes back on the chute. When the metal-plated roof is about 7 feet below, I let go of the box. Fountain of Youth Super Serum, away! Spinning around to watch it, I lean on the wheel and even out the nose. The box is sucked backward, it dips down, and I wait for it to hit the roof. And wait. And wait. Meanwhile, my Rimbo lands easily on the copper plating, only a slight skid to grapple with. I kill the propulsion. The pit darkens. Why'd it get dark? My gut knots, and looking up, I see an undercarriage? Covering the right half of the moonroof's dome, the black bullet sailing overhead. Derek's Omni can fly. A steam-powered 100% metal-clad aeronautical mobile. Brack. When I turn, looking over my right shoulder, I pound my fist against the glass. The third box, dangling in midair, it's been caught in a net, with magnets sewn into the wire meshing, which is attached to the Omni. Suddenly, I can't move. My ribcage actually hurts my lungs. With my nose pressed to the right curve of the moonroof, I watch as the package floats away, like magic. It's raised up and up, then into the mobile via an open chute. 50 vials. 50 avens. Gone, just like that. I can't believe he's doing this. It's worse than betrayal. He warned me. I should have known. That don't make it hurt less, though. I need to try and stop it. Stop him. But do I have time? I can't check my cuff comm. I need both hands on the wheel. Benny, I call into the mic, knuckles tight to the wheel. How long before the squadrons come through? A few moments later.
12 minutes,
he says. Then,
but Ren, Terrence is back, and so is Jones. Kent, we don't know where he is, but this is not a competition. No one made it to the last drop-off. It's dangerous out there. I want you off in 7.
Very rarely does he go so far as to try and tell me what to do, so I know he's serious. Doesn't mean I'll listen, though. Depends on what I can do in 7 minutes. I try to veer right, but my Rimbo refuses. The metal groans. I'm jolted forward, thrown from the seat. Turning my head, I do a double take. The black Omni. It's behind me? I look up. It's also above me. Now I'm really confused. They must be tag-teaming, Derek and Katana. One Omni roars at my rear, gains speed. Next thing I know, it's by my side. Our metal screeching together. Sparks firework between us. That driver who wants to kill me must be Katana. She sideswipes my Rimbo so hard she's got to be trying to flip it. Half the mobile lifts. I look left, fuming. Benny worked too hard on this job for me to watch it undone in a matter of seconds. But when I look through the glass, at the shock of rusty, brassy hair, I nearly choke. It's Derek. I knew he might try to stop me. But this? It's like all of a sudden he wants worse than that. He wants me dead. As I look again, though, I realize I'm not so sure. His features are off, somehow. The jaw is too square. Shoulders, too thick. This guy looks like Derek, but something is different. So there's a Derek lookalike trying to kill me to my left, and another black Omni overhead, who could be Derek or could be Katana. Out of nowhere, I feel my Rimbo being pushed down. I look up through the moonroof and see the undercarriage of the other Omni staring back at me. It's keeping me from flipping over. No way would Katana try to help me. Ever. That must be Derek above. He's trying to help me. For a moment, the realization almost undoes me, that he could be against the others, because of what I said. It feels too big, and I try not to think about what it means. Turning once again to the front, I see a silver cord dangling, the netting's metal tail, smack in the middle of my windshield, the package. It's dragging behind my mobile, skidding, and throwing sparks of its own. So close. If my roof were open, I could reach for it myself. Still gripping the wheel steady, my palms grow hot and begin to cramp. I accelerate and watch my water tank drop to a third. The Derek lookalike accelerates. I pull back. So does he. He's my echo. I can't stay locked like this forever. I rotate my left wrist to find my cuff comm. 9 minutes till the Blues get here. 4 to finish my route, assuming I take Benny's warning. In my head, I do the math. My last drop-off lies a full 5 boardwalks west, not including diagonals. I can't make 2 more, not under 6 minutes, not with Katana and Derek around. Out the back of the moonroof, I watch the copper box ricocheting behind the engine. In 9 minutes, those 50 people will be given a cure, a drug they believe will save them. The thought adds metric tons to my bones, my muscles. Like there's something inside me so empty, so barren, that it actually has a weight. The 50 faces paint themselves against my mind, all in shades of Avon. This time, I look, and then I decide. I'm leaving it. I step on the pedal and flip the propulsion boost. The combination of a steam engine plus the thrust sends my Rimbo barreling forward. Barbs of guilt prod, but I don't try to pull away. I feel them all. They deserve that much. The Omni overhead lifts up, the other trailing behind. With the building's edge in sight, I hold the wheel steady. Then race nearer and nearer to it. Then I'm over it. In midair, I get my bearings by looking straight ahead to the West Isle and above the Electric City, clouds muddied together in oranges and purples, all ink-tinged. Smoke from the riot still hides the tallest buildings, and a wispy fog rolls in across the strait. Through it, I can see white specks, probably from people's windows, but the specks, they're moving. Just as I'm about to land on the 7th roof. Ren. Come in, Ren. Benny's voice is tinny in my ear. A stream of white noise spits from my earpiece. He gives me no time to answer. Get out, now, he says. The DI. They're here. They're early. I touch down on the 7th roof, metal clunking as it rebounds. Through the fog, what were specks in the sky moments ago are quickly becoming a full-on light show. Vibrations shudder my mobile, make me clamp my jaw tight with understanding. It's not the squadron with the governor's cure. Those are straight Blues helis, and they're circling the ward in swarms. Correction. Circling me in swarms. Chapter 50 11:42 p.m., Sunday. The helis fly out of the mud-colored clouds as if they were born there. I feel acid-filled. I am poison that I want them to drink up. In my ear, our signals mix. My mic shrieks. They're flying so close now. Several hundred feet away. Their high beams and spotlights cast broken circles everywhere. The sick house rooftops. They're landing on each of them and gathering the packages. I'm cut off from my 2 last drop-offs, the final sick houses on my route. Now, at a standstill, I glance over my shoulder. The 2 Omnis can't lose sight of them. Scanning the quadrant, I find them 5 bridges southeast. 2 black mobiles and a fountain of orange sparks. One races over the planked suspension bridge, the other hovers alongside. Every time one Omni jerks forward, makes like it's about to head west, for me, the other mobile cuts them off. Derek's been keeping the other Omni away. In the sky, spinning propellers remind me that I'm a sitting duck, but I don't move, yet. I watch them there. One by one, I count the ways in which I hurt. The thick skin of all my angers turns hot, fighting that cloud. Not stopping. It's about more than just tonight. It's about my life. And not just mine. All of ours. being told we're getting a cure, when in fact, we are getting a death sentence. Funneling rainwater from our rooftops, when across the strait, the wealthy buy fresh black market. It's about being hated for no reason. I face the cloud. I won't give up. Not now. Flooring the pedal, I shoot toward the swarm. My fingers shake as I grip the wheel, and I can feel the burn at my cheeks. Just as I meet the end of the roof, a high beam grazes my side. They've seen me. My headset shakes static in my ear. I hear a click, click, clicking, like someone changing stations. Then more static, like all the other channels have died, leaving only one.
It's over, Chief growls through my earpiece.
Throwing my wheel right, dodging out of the beam's way, I see my heading for the next is now out of whack. My Rimbo careens over the building's edge, and Chief's voice is back in my head.
Tell your boy Kent that Governor Voss would personally like to thank him, he says.
I don't understand. I whisper into the mic, stomach muscles cementing together, and not just 'cause I'm currently sailing over a boardwalk. My boy Kent?
He called you in, told us you were alive, Chief snorts. Wanted to see his father got the stuff. Didn't exactly turn down the reward money either.
Of course not. I imagine pulling him to pieces, limb from limb. We were never on the same team. Stupid of me to think that we were. Then, steely, through the comm.
Last chance, Dane. Where can the governor locate another spring?
Chief Dunn asks. It's a question I'll never answer. I'll take my last chance, I say into my mic, looking ahead. Why haven't I landed already? Right, left, I look, and I see nothing. No roof to catch my fall. Not even a building facade that I can aim for. I've completely overshot my next roof. I'm in free fall. Buildings tower past. They grow larger, wider. Punching my fist to the steering wheel. It's over. It's over. I can't make the other drop-offs. A curling, constricting rage forces its way out my throat. How do you know when to give up? How can this be the end? Like yawning forever, I'm thrown down into the center of the earth. My stomach wants out of my body so badly the drop has made me sick. I can't even relax my jaw, my tongue's latched to the roof of my mouth. This is the longest jump I've ever made, and I'm still falling. When my Rimbo finally hits Broadwalk, it thuds and screeches, clobbering the planks. They groan and smoke under my tires, and the sharp, coated smell of rubber wafts in, even though the weight chute is closed.
Have it your way, Dunn says.
A spotlight pins me. I'm a fly needled to a wall. I watch a heli carve through the black and glance at my water tank. Almost empty. But I floor it anyway. Under my tires, the wood rattles and shakes, not made for mobile travel. Jamming on the brakes, I spin the wheel to face east again, closer to Mad Ave. I need to hide. Right now, I'm just too easy a target. As I'm wheeling down the boardwalk, time turns to sludge. The seconds rush by, but minutes take forever. Then, the first net falls. I remember from when they netted me before. The edges flap like impatient wings. Electronic, motion-detecting pulses keep the nets open, and magnets woven into them are attracted to any mobile steel frame. They'll jam your props if you get caught. I turn the steering wheel left and push retract, folding the wheels into the underbelly. My Rimbo hurtles in an arc off-broad, and within moments, it's living up to its name. It skips along the surface of the water, and I flip on the propellers to give a boost. Once I'm closer to the end of the gutter, I risk looking behind me, about 100 feet up and one block over. I watch the net float down, looking for motion from my Rimbo. When an easy wind sways the suspension bridge, the net gets caught on the zigzags,
its motion sensors confused.
Don't watch. Go. I steer left under the Mad Ave boardwalk, so I'm out of the heli's sight. Since the walkways were built with tides in mind, the canals are high. My Rimbo skips under the walk, leaving me a good foot of clearance between the roof at its highest skip and the planks. Can't keep this up, though. It's not made for so long on the water. I weave through two pylons and check to see if the air is clear. Tonight, though, everything is bright. Two flashlights shine on the ward, the moon, and that heli's spotlight flooding the canal with light. My Rimbo's bounces begin to fall short, each one closer than the next. It slows even as I steer, rallying the bullet blood in my veins. I need to dock it, fast. Forget it. Just get out. I'll have to go by foot from here. It's my best chance for avoiding the heli above. My Rimbo slows even more. When it makes its final skip, I pop the roof and reach up, clutching the support beams on the underside of the boardwalk. I climb out, dropping into the water. I don't have a chance to feel the cold. Miss Dane, a voice crackles in my ear. Not the chief. This voice is too subtle, too many undercurrents. Governor Voss.
Since you are not willing to share the spring's location with me, I thought it only fair to withhold a location from you, something equally valuable. Do you have any idea what I'm talking about?
The hairs on my neck know what he's about to say before my mind makes any sense of it. No, sir, I answer, still clinging to the boardwalk's beams. But my stomach knows the feeling before the drop, before the downhill.
One thing of value for another, only fair.
The governor pauses, and I hear him tapping.
I'm referring to the girl you call your sister.
The edges of my eyesight go black. You have Avon, I whisper. Like burning, the black curls at the periphery working its way in, until all that's left is the memory of what was there. My body tries to extinguish itself, but no amount of salt water will ever be enough.
You can't hurt her. But clinical research is so important to understanding the spring's exact properties. Recall my ancestor's letter. Entire limbs. Regrown. I imagine it's painful. The loss. And the regeneration.
He wouldn't. Behind the smoke and blur, I look for her.
Where are you?
Where are you? My only answer comes from the wailing heli as it hovers, waits, and the animal noises I make that have no name. Outside of me, I hear tapping. The governor, through the comm.
Well, well, well. It's nearly 1 a.m. The evening has been very successful, he says lightly. You, Miss Dane, have exceeded all my expectations.
I shake my head. Where are the squadrons?
What do you mean?
I mumble, pressing my fists into my eye sockets, fighting them.
What do I mean?
He repeats, like a riddle.
Honestly, Renata, democide? Really? Hardly the best way to win over the people. Especially not after this morning's riot. I thought this time, perhaps the Taitai would try and stop me. They did not. Smart. You, however, you accomplished for me far more than I ever could have on my own. My wife will be cured. I'll be hailed as a hero for weakening the Blight's hold on the ward. And after you share the spring's location, the United Metro Islets will return to the thriving, prosperous metropolis it once was, with fresh water for all. This city will never die again.
With his pause, a hard, rotten pit of fear bursts wide in my chest. My body heaves, like it's trying to get rid of something on the inside. But nothing comes out. The pieces that didn't quite fit, the twinge in my gut that I was too stupid to understand.
All along? A lie? All that's left? my location,
Governor Voss continues.
Today's riot cannot happen again. I must have access to more. Aventine Cola Tora is waiting. Till then. Good night, Miss Dane.
The line dies. A lie. A trick. Every choice I made in the past 24 hours. I want it back. I should have chosen Avon. It should always have been Avon. Life is not a numbers game. Just one. Just one. Energy raw and volatile is all that's left. I pull myself to the edge of the boardwalk, kick my feet over, forehead pressed to the planks, heaving with an exhaustion I can no longer feel. I come to standing, face to face with the aeromobile. Its spotlight cuts a hole in the night's darkness like target practice. Each of my nerves is a lit, fraying fuse, begging for zero. Every cell is a bomb, and they detonate with one singular need. Do anything. In the air, the heli howls metallic death. I run toward its light. It's waiting for me. The beam scalds. City dust tornadoes around inside it, shaken by the heli's props. And simpler enemies, like wind. Everything moves in slow motion. I watch. Somewhere in the subway tunnels of my mind, I know this makes no sense. And at the same time, it is the only thing that does. Nothing else is real. Every choice. False. Shielding my eyes, I shout up at the sky to the mindless, gutless aeromobile. Take me! I'm immune! I yell. I'm here! I'm right here! My words fall to pieces, collide with the propellers, and the water churning from the pressure. The man in the heli doesn't see or hear me. And that feels right, too. Appropriate. I've become invisible. My choices no longer about me. I wave my arms. I throw myself up into the air. I say it again. I'm standing right here! Time stops. What was slow motion is now freeze frame. Above the heli circles, and I catch a glint of metal. A man inside loads a net, this one for people, into a long-barreled gun. I've been here before, 3 years ago, the same scene. And so I know what happens next. He loads the gun, shoots the net. It'll hit, and it'll hurt no worse than getting punched. You're folded into its diamond-meshed wings and carried away, dangling through the air like any other package. When the gun sounds, I hear nothing. I see stars. The net's twinkling border. And then, hardness, in the way of hands gripping around my waist, in the planks that I fall onto, rough and splintering. I'd expected the next minutes to exist in verticals. The net should be lifting me by now. Instead, everything is horizontal. Thick pylons lying on their sides. Nails and splintering wood. Close up on the chopping waves. No stars. No tossed asphalt Milky Way. No beast in the sky. Freeze frame. Off. The shift hurts. Makes no sense. Dust, propellers, the water churning. My eyes are too slow, too small for the world. They can't process. Even the smell, ocean salt and stale brack, hurts my nose, sharp at the back of my throat. Around my waist, nothing stings as it should. Not the way the nets should. There's muscle there. Thick, unyielding flesh, forcing me out of the beam. Get in, Derek's voice tells me. We're dockside at a black Omni. How did we get here? Let me go! I push and pull in a tug of war of arms and legs. Looking up, I again notice the slight freckling along his cheeks. Eyes rusty red and brown. The beam finds us. His hair becomes a straight shot of fire, sparking to life. That last color, it sends me into overdrive, crosses all my wires. I'm a schematic with no lines. I'm an ocean with no body. I'm words without letters, a numberless value. I am senseless, and I am crying, holding on to and throwing back anything that comes too close. Derek lifts me by the waist. I struggle, but can't remember why. He lowers me down. The corner I sit in fits like a hard shell. He shuts the roof. I twist. I have a body of snakes, a pit of them. I forget to breathe. I cry. Too hard. My body breathes for me. Repeat. Repeat. I quiet. It ends. It begins. It ends again. And it begins again. Because we think in circles. And then, one final time, it really is over. I'm over. Chapter 51. When the shaking stops, when I open my eyes, it's like waking up to find that I've fallen off a map. The world I thought was round is flat, and nothing is as it was before. A dull ache has taken Avon's place inside my head. She is gone, and so am I. Under the canal's surface, Derek steers the Omni east, high beams lighting up abandoned cars and buses. The waterways are empty, like always, even more empty now. Vaguely, I feel the cloth of my leggings and the thick fabric of my vest holding in water from the canal. I think I'm cold. I know I'm cold. And for the first time, I understand what it feels like, separate from the discomfort. I don't care that I'm cold, or that my knees are scraped and raw and bloodied. Without feeling any of it, I watch the sunken city through the window. I remember Avon's face at the tank when she saw it all for the first time. Like the machines, in all their useless glory, were the greatest things in the world. Ren? Even my name feels far away, fragile in his mouth. He's just as afraid of saying it as I am of hearing it. I turn my head. That's enough of a response. Where should I take you? For a moment, I forget that there was a plan. It all got so derailed. But there is a plan. It hasn't gone away just because the governor was lying. Garage, I answer. Then, quieter, head tucked between the seat and the window. I'm a fool, I whisper to myself. I know nothing, except for regret. But for what exactly, I'm not sure. Could I have left Callum and all the others to die? I don't know. But somewhere along the road, I went left when I should have gone right. I made the opposite choice. And so I regret something. Not being a better sister, maybe? You and Kitana knew not to do it. You knew not to play into his hands. Derek looks at me. He shakes his head. You're not a fool. We had no idea that he wasn't going to go through with it. So really, we had even more reason to have done something. He sighs, leaning back in his chair. I should have done something, he adds, his voice heavy. And that's how I hear them. Regrets. He has them too. And they have nothing to do with me, or earning me. They're for his own sake, which is all I could take right now. I don't know if I feel worthy, or good enough, of being earned. I saw you out there, I say, mustering something like sympathy. I'm too empty for this kind of talk, but I manage to add, you did something. I was too late. I couldn't stop the others. My brother, he almost... I thought he was you. Derek slows the mobile, begins bringing it up for air. Kitana must have found out on her own that you were alive, then told him and the others. His voice rises. He's afraid I might not believe him. But I do, and I tell him so. And then we're silent. The Omni's headlights cut lines of gold alongside the boardwalk as we break the surface. Did you know? The word Te-Tai in the Napi, Kitana's native tongue, means between. He doesn't need to explain. Between life and death, I murmur. Between life and death, he repeats, glancing at me out of the corner of his eyes. Then, barely audible, but not for long. What do you mean? I acted against my family, in opposition to the order. He swallows hard, his jaw squared to the windshield. Against Kitana, my wife by contract, and also my single remaining blood brother, Lucas. They'll come after me. His wife, too. They have to. It's our punishment. When I look at Derek again, I see him differently. No longer through the rose-colored lenses I once wore. He's made mistakes. Centuries of them. I see his history laid out in front of me. The same family keeping the same secret. Forever. I see what he's lost tonight. We've both lost tonight. Then come with me, I say. And I push down on the button in the center console that opens the roof. I don't want to move. I'm sluggish and heavy as we bob sideways in the black water. But a gust of wind sweeps through the pit, shakes me from my stupor, and I stand. I just want tonight to end. I thought I was coming with you anyway. In his voice, equal parts fear and hope. He searches my eyes with his. We have to find Avon. I nod, letting him take my hand to help me out of the Omni. I can feel every ache and hurt my bones are carrying as I step onto Mad Ave. Derek lifts himself out after and rests his hand low on my back. As we walk toward Benny's garage, I reach for my necklace out of habit, just to make sure it's there. Attached to the chain, my two pennies. From Avon and from Callum. Without looking at them, I can't tell who gave me which. And then I think of her. Alone. I see where I made the wrong choice. We have to, I whisper, watching the stars overhead, slowly tracing their paths through the night sky. All of them alone on their orbits, together. All of us alone on our orbits, together, too. Epilogue. 7 a.m., Monday. As of 2 a.m. this morning, Governor Voss has successfully eradicated the HBNC virus in approximately 75% of the ward's sick population. Unfortunately, the remaining 25% of the sick population was not administered the cure due to a pharmaceutical recall in a number of the shipments. An unknown percentage living in private homes also remains uncured. Until further notice, the ward will remain under quarantine. Entry and exit regulations will not change, nor will laws regarding transmission of the virus. A citywide celebration will be held at the following times in the following quad. This is what I wake to, a radio crackling the news in Benny's garage. I'm not allowed one moment of forgetting. Even in sleep, there was a far-off hurt that I couldn't place. But I could feel it everywhere. I shift on the spare cot Benny set up for me in the office. It's a small room. I've only been in here once or twice. It's barely bigger than the cot. I like the smallness right now, I realize, and I pull the cool, white linens closer. When I shift again, this time the springs lodge themselves between my ribs. I groan. In the other room, all voices go silent. You think she's up? I hear Callum ask after a moment. We should wake her. Let's let her rest. She should see it, though. See what? I wonder. But the voices are too muffled, too far away for me to tell who else is speaking. Now I'm curious. swinging my feet onto the cool concrete floor, I inhale, prepare myself to meet the others. As I stand, the radio transmission starts over from the beginning. It must be on a loop. As of 2 a.m. this morning, Governor Voss. I take a few steps forward, too achy for a lot of movement. I step slowly into the garage, find Benny, Derek, and Callum huddled around the radio, their faces drawn and tired. Terrence and Jones are sitting in the cloud, docked and floating in the open pool Benny had built into the center of the garage. He made it so you could exit under the boardwalk and ride out onto the canal. What will I see? I ask, and every guy in the room meets my eyes. Except Jones. He looks a bit like he feels he shouldn't be here, keeping himself too quiet, gaze flicking around the garage, landing anywhere but my face. If I had a friend like Kent, I'd be feeling guilty too. If it hadn't been for Kent calling the blues on us. You really think it's smart to be here right now? After what your best friend did? I glare at him, shaking my head. I wouldn't be able to look at myself in the mirror if I were you. Jones didn't know. It's not his fault. Terrence jumps out of the cloud. He blocks off Jones like he knows how close to the edge I am. He didn't know his friend is scum? I scoff. I thought everyone knew that. But then, faintly, in the background, as of 2 a.m. this morning, my eyes get hot. Tears start to build. And the next thing I know, Tare's got his arm around me. I don't want to fight anymore. Especially not Tare. So I just drop my head to his shoulder. I can't see the others. Everything becomes blurry. But all I want is to turn around and run back to the cot. I don't want to see anyone. We failed, I say. Tare rocks me side to side, cradling me tight, his palm brushing what's left of the hair on my scalp. I'm no different from an infant right now. She needs to see it, Callum says, and something in his voice makes me turn. See what? Callum lifts himself from the chair and walks over to me, places both hands on my shoulders. We didn't fail, he whispers, trying to catch my gaze as I look away. Not even a little bit. With that, he strides over to the garage door and lifts. The air is thick with sunlight. It falls into the garage like a blanket, making all of us warm, even me, almost. For a moment, we watch the Mad Ave crowds go about their business like usual. But nothing is like usual. The colors. The clothes. A young girl in a torn lavender tutu runs past, holding the hand of an old man. He's grinning and sporting a shiny black suit with a bow tie around his neck. I don't say a word, though my jaw drops a little, I'm sure. Derek comes up behind me. I feel one of his hands on my shoulder, the other at the nape of my neck. Look down, he says into my ear. And I do. And I stop breathing. Littered in front of the door to the left, Benny's doorstep. Pennies. Dozens. 100 maybe. Their copper catches the light perfectly, and it's almost as though we've got a Milky Way's worth of tiny suns shining up from Benny's worn-out welcome mat. I laugh and wipe my nose with my sleeve. They're too pretty. And my heart starts to hurt. I can't believe that they mean what I think they mean. I don't get it, I whisper. Renata, Benny laughs lightly, resting his hand on my other shoulder. Squeezing it. The people are not dumb. They saw the blues removing our packages, and they saw that nothing was replaced. Room accounts for a lot in this city. You should know that. Word of the infamous Red Rider and a team of dragsters dropping off the cure on sick house rooftops is newsworthy on any day. This is too much. 100 thank yous, Ren. 100 people wishing you luck. I choke on the last word. Luck. Avon should be here right now. Will I need it this time? To find her? I ask, thinking no one but myself can hear. Callum turns me around to face him, His blues are bluer than ever.
Never, he answers. You have us. All of us. We're going to find her.
Jones nods, along with Derek, and Terrence, and Benny. And I choke again, this time on the mixed ball of feelings rolling around inside me. Looking down at the galaxy of copper stars lighting up the doorstep, I start to get that fullness in my chest I had at the hospital, like my body simply don't have enough room in it. There's too much to feel. They have their Avens back. And all of a sudden, I'm able to do it. Hold in my head all the numbers, even the ones that didn't get the cure. Avens there, and it hurts. But I don't damn myself off from it this time. We'll find her. We have to. In the morning sky, the sun, the real sun, is its own shade of copper, getting ready to shine for other people, share its warmth across the globe. For now, all I can do is watch it rise for everyone else, for the 100 others at my feet, 'cause I know I'll find my own again.
This is Merritt Hicks. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of The Ward by Jordana Frankel. This program was produced by Dion Audio Services. The director was Bob Dion. Executive producer, Caitlin Gehring. Text copyright 2013 by Jordana Frankel. Production copyright 2013 by HarperCollins Publishers. All rights reserved. Thank you for listening.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.